Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Hello everyone, welcome to Senate Finance. It's May 4th. Present at the table are Senators Hoffman, Olson, Dunleavy, Bishop, and Kelly. We're going to take up SB 1001 today from the perspective of OMB. We were going to have tomorrow an admin, but I think your admin people are traveling, so that meeting's kind of up in the air right now. Anyway, Pat, you want to come on up and go ahead and present SB 101, and then members can just ask questions as you want.
Senator Kelly.
Also, Senator Michicki and McKinnon are online, in attendance online. Go ahead, Pat.
For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm the budget director for the Walker administration. And behind me are people who can address specific questions, if desired, on nearly all of the items that are here. And specifically for admin, Kate Sheehan is in the room if there are questions on the contracts. The 1001 that is before us is a committee substitute that was built from the piece of legislation that the Walker administration that we submitted. That was a document. Given that the House Bill 72 is not a funded budget, the appropriation legislation submitted by the administration mirrored House Bill 72 with a few minor changes. This committee substitute takes those changes and isolates it just to the changes and leaves House Bill 72 intact. So So this particular piece of legislation in front of you is a committee substitute that is just isolated to the changes between what we provided as a starting point for the special session to get the discussion back on track to get a fully funded budget completed. So with that, I'm on page 2, and section 1, if I follow the discussion that the staffer representative Newman provided, P. Declan, he was saying this is kind of the nuts and bolts section. This is specific program funding sources. So starting on line 13 and 14, these are items in the education and early development, the Alaska Learning Network, and pre-K grants, restoring funding for those. Down for the health and social services, starting on page 18, there are two items in child services. This is frontline social workers at $1 million, and this is using unrestricted federal funds, and then the family preservation grants, and that 330 is general fund. Starting on line 21 through 27, these were unallocated reductions to health and social services, and they were swapping.
Excuse me.
Senator Dunleavy?
We're trying to find it.
Oh, I'm
You said page 18. I'm assuming you mean
I'm sorry. Line 18. I'm
line
sorry.
18.
I'm on page 2.
Page 2.
My apologies. Going too fast.
Just a moment before you. Pat, were the frontline social workers in your original budget?
That is one item that was not in the original budget, but came out through session. There was the ability.
So I just want to know whether it was or wasn't. Mm-hmm. And is and likewise family preservation? Were those both in the original or just
family preservation was in the original?
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Dunleavy. Any question?
It's a 30,000 foot question, but it's in response to something the commissioner said, and I just need clarification. If that's all right,
go ahead.
I think, and I'm paraphrasing, Commissioner, but you said something along the lines of, given that the bill that was sent over and passed by both the House and the Senate was not a fully funded bill, basically that's why we have the CS before us. How does the CS propose to make it fully funded?
The CS provides for a compromise document. It's a starting point to re-engage the discussion, to get a compromise, to get a three-quarter vote, get to a fully funded budget. There are other mechanisms.
It's not fully funded either, right?
This would not be funded without a three-quarter vote.
Okay, so it's essentially the same thing. And the Senate did pass a fully funded budget. The House didn't. So I think you said this House, the budget that came from the House and the Senate, the Senate's budget was actually fully funded. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just trying to understand. The Senate passed a budget by a vote of 15-5, and then they passed a way to fund that budget, the same number, went over to the House. The House passed the budget, but fell 3 or 4 short of the vote needed to access the CBR. This is coming before us, and I'm just trying to understand how this fully funds the budget.
Go ahead, Pat.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, this would not fully fund the budget. Only a compromise or another funding source that can be accomplished with a majority vote would create a funded budget. What we were trying to do is get the discussion back on get a discussion document to move towards to having a funded budget, because although yes, the Senate passed by a three-quarter vote, the legislation sitting on the governor's desk for a budget for next year is two-fifths funded.
I'll save some questions here for the lawyer.
Go ahead, Pat.
So page 2, my apologies, not page 18, page 2, line 21 through 27. This restores unallocated administrative reductions in the Department of Health and Social Services in the support services areas. These were fund source changes from general fund to IA receipts, and this just swaps them back to restore the general fund and remove the IA receipts, because those intra-agency receipts are unrecoverable, therefore it would just be a reduction. So this restores those. The on page 29, the agency-wide unallocated reduction is another unallocated reduction of travel and support that item restores. On page 3, line 6, in the budget that was passed but not funded, includes $9 million of a $14 million request for efforts on North Slope gas commercialization. This is the remainder of that original request from the governor at $4.9 million. Starting on line 9 for the Department of Public Safety, there are two items proposed. It's the Alaska State Troopers aircraft section. This is a $500,000 increase, and it's for the helicopter operations for wildlife troopers in Fairbanks. And on line 16, it's Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, $1.5 million, restoring the prevention dollars in the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, priority of this administration, priority of the previous administration. This was originally a $3 million program last year. In the governor's proposed budget, we submitted $1.5 million. The $1.5 million was removed. We feel like prevention efforts in domestic violence and sexual assault is significantly important, so that we're asking that be restored. But again, this whole document is a document to get the discussion started to get to a fully funded budget.
Pat, how much is already in the Council on Domestic Violence?
I want to say in the range of $16 million. And that's 80% of that funding is for shelter operations.
Okay. Thanks. Great. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat, I had this budget and it was portrayed to the committee, the subcommittee, that these dollars were being transferred from the governor's office to the public safety department, and that they were one time, and it was envisioned that they would be eliminated in FY17. And I'm wondering if that is still the position of the administration, that the money, the 1.5, although it's scheduled for step down to a, because the $3 million was in the governor's budget, choosing respect, it was transferred to the Department of Public Safety for the first time, and in FY17 it was to be eliminated.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I believe in the governor's budget it was transferring Department of Public Safety. On the House side, they moved it to one-time funding, and then, you know, it was eliminated on the Senate side. And the intent would be to continue prevention efforts, whether it would be $1.5 million or $1.3 million or $1
million. $16 million. As you had answered the chairman, there's still $16 million in the budget.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I am aware that the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault has that. That is not prevention funding, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Pat.
So on page 3, line 22, it's restoring $7 million to the Marine Highway system. The Marine Highway system was reduced significantly in the budgets, and what this would do is restore all of the summer already published schedules for the summer, maintain some additional schedules in the winter months but there will still be some winter schedules impacted even with the restoration of this $7 million. So, line 27 is restoring $7 million of the $30 million reduction in University of Alaska budget. Again, this would restore up to 70, reduce the need to eliminate up to 70 positions at the university.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat, those 70 positions that this would, I'm not going to say theoretically impact, but could potentially impact, do you have a breakdown on those positions? Are they frontline? Are they teachers? Are they, you know what I'm asking?
So the breakdown I have is...
I don't need it in detail, but where's the lion's share of the reductions coming from?
So 40% at University of Alaska Fairbanks, 30% at University of Alaska Anchorage, 7% at University of Alaska Southeast, 17% in the statewide office. So UAF, UAA, UAS would be in the range of 50 to 60% faculty, 50 to 60% staff. At the system office would be largely staff because they're staff positions. So each university is going through their prioritization process on which programs and services are being reduced from the $30 million.
How much is this in anticipation of the salary increases?
The seven million is separate from the salary increases.
Go ahead, Senator Bishop.
I just like to go on the record. I've written the Board of Regents a letter over 30 days ago. I've written another follow-up letter with some cost-saving suggestions, and I have yet to get a response from the Board of Regents that could maybe go a long ways towards maybe backfilling just a little bit of this to keep some of these people on, and if they're listening, I'd appreciate a response. If the letter in my conversation is passing in the airwaves and through the mail, I apologize, but we're at times in this state where we all need to put our thinking hat on and work together.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Dunleavy?
Commissioner, could you, those numbers one more time, please, on the bodies?
So in percentage, current percentage distributions of the reduction of the $30 million unrestricted general fund reduction that's currently imposed is exactly 41.9% at UAF, 33.4% at UAA, 7.2% at UAS, and 17.5% in the system office, the statewide administration office. The statewide administration office has been apportioned a proportionally larger share of the unrestricted funds to minimize the impact on the campuses and academic programs.
And the total number of positions?
So it would be
70.
Up to 70.
70. And do you know if, as the center asked, do you know if they're teaching? Or if, I mean, statewide would be administrative, I'm assuming, but how many of these would be teaching positions or professors, not in administration?
So through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the current estimate right now is 234 positions. With the additional funding, it could reduce that by up to 70 positions. In general, you have about 50 to 60% teaching positions to staff positions. There's also research positions funded partially on general funds and partially on federal and private funds.
So if this amount of money is increased, those 70 positions will be filled with bodies. There's no empty PCNs or anything going on here?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the university received a 16.9% or 16.9 million unallocated reduction last year. So the empty PCNs have been utilized for that plus layoffs, and this would be primarily people. And so it's saving 70 current jobs.
Take a brief at ease.
We're back on the record.
Except for me. Okay, go ahead, Pat. Where were we?
Okay, so we're now at page 3, line 32.
Okay.
So this is the restoration of the COLA increases and the contracts for employees under labor contracts. And the intent on this particular section is to allow the administration to honor the existing labor contracts, allow the administration to negotiate in good faith with the unions, understanding that the non-union employees are not receiving a COLA increase. Then we open the contracts and address the contracts in a systemic approach. There are 3 contracts open this year for the biggest unions, so over half of the employees, those contracts are being negotiated this year. And it's to honor the contracts and negotiate in good faith at a much more constrained level. So it's the intent is not to treat employees unequal, but to honor the labor contracts as we would honor contracts with any other third party for the state government.
So how come you pulled the non-union money out? How does that achieve your goal?
Senator Kelly, we understand the constraint. The partial exempt and the exempt are on statute. The statute or the legislation was passed to have the cost of living increase removed from non-union employees. That is not a negotiated legal contract. It's really based on the negotiated legal contract and being able to honor those contracts going forward, negotiate in good faith.
So how come you anticipate you're going back into negotiations with the big three for 17, not 16?
Senator Kelly, we are going in for 17. We would ask to reopen contracts for 16.
So why not keep the money for the non-union folks?
Senator Kelly, it was a negotiation. It was a call made understanding the fiscal position and the interest honoring a legal contract. We understand the fiscal position.
Let me give you brief at ease and then kind of think this out a little bit. If you need to talk to somebody, go ahead.
come back. Go ahead, Pat.
So I believe the question was between the funding on the labor contracts versus the funding on the other statewide employees.
Right.
And the issue is around honoring the contracts, honoring the legal contracts, understanding we're in a fiscal constraint. These contracts were negotiated in good faith. We would like to ask for reopeners in 16 and for sure in the negotiations for the fiscal year 17 that they are negotiated with a view of the fiscal situation that we are in and the action taken on the employees not covered by a union. But it's honoring the legal contract.
So you're aware that if the legislature turns down the language or doesn't fund it, that is a reopener? Well, go down that. I mean, you guys, that's an internal decision you can make, but that is a reopener. It's not honoring the contracts if we don't pay it or if we reject the language that's in the contracts that reopens them. Go ahead. So we can go to the next step. And the last thing is it appears here, sorry, that I'm just not exactly sure what the whole deal is with the non-union people. Why are you taking the money out for the non-union people?
Senator Kelly, it was probably, if it were in, and the legislation that has passed both the House and the Senate and has yet to be transmitted to the governor that changes the salary schedule for non-covereds, this is that amount of money. I guess we could have submitted this budget with this all employees at $56 million, and then if that legislation passed, the fiscal notes would have been the negative $21 million. This kind of jumped a step.
But you're in possession or will be in possession of the bill, so you really kind of determine whether it passes or not. Okay.
A little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
Section 2 is just the breakdown of funding sources for the previous pages, page 5, 6, 7, and 8, where the funding sources associated with those, that nuts and bolts section, as well as 10 and 11. So if we jump out to page 12, and starts out section 4, this particular section are the numbers associated with Medicaid expansion. And so starting page 12, line 11, this is the general fund savings expected within the Department of Corrections due to Medicaid expansion. Starting on line 15, this is the savings in behavioral health, $1.5 million general fund savings in behavioral health due to Medicaid expansion. Line 18, $1 million savings to the state on catastrophic chronic illness. And then line 22, the acceptance of $145.4 million in federal funds for Medicaid expansion. So then section 5, page 13, has those numbers by fund source. So I'm all the way now to page 15.
Senator Dunleavy, was that a hand raising? Okay. Where are we, Pat?
So page 15?
Okay.
Section 7. Right. This section... does two things. It restores of the $47 million reduction that started at Conference Committee for Education that was then reduced to $16 million. This restores that $16 million, and instead of using $157 million in the in-state gas line funding, it uses $118 million in the in-state gas line.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Could you just, you don't have to change any words, just start over again. I was,
okay.
Go ahead.
So, page 15, section 7. Okay. This is restoration of the $16.4 million VSA funding. And instead of using $157 million in in-state gas line funding to fund education, it uses $118 million from that funding source. The in-state gas line funding is referred to as the backup plan, and there is funding available in it at 118. There's also funding available in it at $157 million. The difference just allows for more flexibility to move the move activities towards a positive end on getting a gas line, whether it's the backup plan or the Alaska LNG. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
And with this level of funding, what is the BSA equivalent?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't know it off the top of my head. It was the BSA passed for fiscal year 16 without change versus the 98.5%.
Senator Hoffman, that's 58.80.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy started a question earlier, and I'm not sure we quite got there. And I, Ms. Pitney, I understand what you're saying about the beginning of a compromise on this three-quarter vote, but these are the desires of the governor. And I'm not sure that I can draw a parallel between some of the things that the governor has always wanted that we didn't feel we could afford with this, you know, $4 billion shortfall this year and $4 billion shortfall next year. So it seems, I'm trying to be careful how to say this, it doesn't sound negative, but the politics of saving a few programs while we continue to overspend, This doesn't get us any closer to a three-quarter vote. I mean, you may have one or two issues in common, but these are not the things that the minority has asked for. So how does this help?
Go ahead, Pat.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, these have been consistently the governor's priorities. They remain the governor's priorities. The appropriation bill forwarded for the special session was to open the conversation. The governor and administration fully understand this negotiation is within the legislature, and it's the legislature's authority and responsibility to pass the budget, and we will honor that. We just need a fully funded budget.
If I can continue, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Sam Chicky.
So what you're, I'm not going to read anything into what you're saying, but it sounds like if we were able to negotiate a three-quarter vote or chose another avenue of funding, would the governor realize that the appropriation process is the responsibility of the legislature? And do you think, I mean, his biggest concern was not fully funding the budget. So is there a chance that if we work out another issue, I mean, I know you can't answer that, but that the governor may support the current level of funding. And when I say current level, I should say the level that has passed both the House and the Senate, three-quarter vote with the Senate, and a little less than that with the House.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, had a fully funded budget come to the governor's desk, it would be respected as it is the authority and responsibility for the legislature to pass the budget. So the problem is, without the fully funded budget, we don't have a mechanism to go forward.
Thank you. One more, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, so the one more is just to, as you look around the table there, I hear the things that the governor would like to see in his budget, and I can tell you that the cuts that we've had to make have been very painful for all of us. I think you understand the end goal. This could be the first year of further reductions, and I'd like to hear whether or not the administration recognizes that we lost a lot of sleep on these cuts as well. We just simply are working on the survivability of our state in a very difficult fiscal situation.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki.
Senator Machicki. Go ahead, Pat.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the administration and the governor are well aware of the fiscal situation, and in the original governor's budget proposed, it was a nearly $700 million reduction. This take two budget, as we've referred to it, only changed the spending plan proposed in the budget by 1.4%. So the governor has accepted as much of the decisions and would accept all of the decisions, well, I wouldn't say all of the decisions, but almost all of the decisions if the budget was funded. And is fully aware that we're going to be looking for additional reductions in the future, as well as, of course, in the summer addressing the revenue measures, as we will have to, given that oil prices aren't rebounding, and even if they did rebound, they'd have to be in the 130 range to be able to balance the budget.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to get into specific percentages, but how large of a cut does the administration think they're going to be looking at in 17? We did not hit, the Senate did not hit the number that even the governor had targeted. So I'm hopeful, since you said that further cuts are going to be addressed in the future in FY17, and you alluded to potentially opening up the contracts in 16, the 16 contracts in 17. But is there any ballpark number that this committee can have at least some assurances that we're going to continue to march down the path to a budget for the state of Alaska that we feel is righted, knowing that the administration is going to be embarking upon revenue issues this summer?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, if you recall, at the very beginning of session, we had sent, or not even session, it was when we first took office, we asked commissioners to provide 5% and 8% reduction scenarios, which were the basis for the budget we submitted for fiscal year 16. At the same time we asked about those, we said, over the course of the next 3 or 4 years, tell us if over the course of the next 3 or 4 years you reduced your budget by 25%, what would your agency look like? Not that we targeted 25%, but we wanted to know what it looked like, because for some agencies, that was probably okay. For other agencies, it would go too deep, but we wanted to define that. We're just now working with commissioners and admin services directors to further that exercise. We're coming together to look at efficiencies across all agencies. To give you an exact target, I'm not prepared to do that today, but I do want to note that conference committee reductions relative to management plan for several agencies are over 25%. Commerce is 32%. The non-formula portions of education is 31% reduction. Governor's office is 31%. That's has some one-time items and some transfers. Military and Veterans Affairs has a 30% reduction. That's heavily aerospace, but that aerospace has 100% reduction. So there are, and Department of Labor, did I miss that one? Department of Labor and Workforce Development is at a 22% reduction. So many, the depth of reductions and the depth of reductions accepted thus far, not restored in the Take 2 budget, are pretty significant, and some of them are already there. But we do anticipate coming down again. The cuts next year will be harder. We were able to reduce by over $400 million in capital budget items this year. We're at $118 million in capital budget. Reducing that by another $400 million will be pretty difficult. So our next round of reductions are certainly going to be harder. Would we get to the 8% that we're looking at today? Unlikely. But we are committed to continuing the reduction efforts, but at the same time, assuming or looking to see what is the appropriate level of government for this state and out there.
Senator Hoffman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So 8% is probably not achievable, but it seems to me that you're saying that the administration is looking at a further reduced budget that would be submitted to the legislature. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that is very much my goal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Take a brief ease.
We're back on. So, Pat, regarding the future and the potential for cuts, one of the things that's very difficult to describe to people who don't work in this budgeting business for the state is how we have unexpected increases that don't necessarily have to do with increased government spending. And so I would just call your attention to the $118 million in education funding, which is one-time money. And if I think it is the governor's goal not to have any cuts to education, then next year, if you have to replace that $118 plus the increases that are coming, you're looking somewhere in the neighborhood of $280 million. So next year, to get to zero, you have to cut $280 million from day-to-day operations just to say that you didn't have any increases. Now, this year, our committee, through all the work that we went through, what was the total?
337,
320, something like that, is how much we cut. And that's when we had far more low-hanging fruit. So next year, welcome back to Juneau. Here's your finance portfolio. Oh my gosh, you've got to cut $280 million just so you can go home and thump your chest and say, we didn't do anything. That's a reality that we're going to have to overcome next year. And to anybody, and I see Senator Hoffman over there nodding and smiling because he's been through this a lot, that's just a big problem that we have. So the pushback you're going to feel from this committee, regardless of how much the governor says he is committed to reducing spending, I'm not going to question him on that. I think it's a matter of experience. These things just happen, and they're extremely difficult to overcome. So how are we going to get $280 million just to get to zero? And we're going to have to just stay somewhere on track. We're going to have to cut an additional $250 million to deal with that deficit that's coming at us like a tsunami. We're talking about $500 million of cuts next year. Wow. We cut $327, day-to-day operations. That's what I'm talking about. Almost impossible. Or if it is impossible, or if it's possible, and I think it probably is, it's kind of devastating. So my invitation to you is take advantage of everything we've offered you this year. You guys started with the cuts. Thanks. Good job. I don't discount that a bit. I wouldn't be adding anything back here. So. Senator Bishop, you look like you have a question. Oh. And is Senator Machicki, anything else? Senator Dunleavy?
No, I'm okay at this time. Thank you.
Senator Olson?
Not at this time, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Anybody else you want to bring up, Pat? Any business come before the committee? I don't know about tomorrow. I think we are not having a meeting tomorrow because we were going to meet with that admin, and your people are both in transit. That's correct. So, no meeting tomorrow. We're adjourned.